Welcome to Gautrain Talks, a podcast series for people on the move.
Welcome to the Gautrain Talks podcast station, the place to be for all matters related to the Gautrain and how it came to be South Africa's first ever rapid rail link. Today we are looking at public-private partnerships and delving into some of the detail it makes for a good triple P and ultimately a successful partnership that includes successful triple P implementation and management. And joining us to talk through that subject is William Daxey, Chief Executive Officer of the Gautrain Management Agency. William, thanks for joining us. Let's start with just a little bit of background on yourself and your role as Chief Executive. What exactly do you do as CEO?
Dylan, I have two jobs. The first job as CEO is to obviously run the Gautrain Management Agency. And that's a nice corporate job. Have about 120 full-time employees, some contract workers, and I have to look after them. The second job is actually embedded in this concession agreement that we have with Bombela, where I am titled the province's representative. And what was intended with this was that there would be someone or small team of people who would represent the province of Gauteng in this agreement. So I have to look after this massive, complex contract, sign all sorts of things, resolve all sorts of disputes and avoid disputes and all things like that in terms of this concession agreement. And I never know on any day whether I'm going to be the kind of the CEO looking after the staff, making sure the GMA works, or making sure the concession agreement works. That is what makes this the best job in the world.
An interesting job as well, William, but what about some of the skills you need, whether it's the chief executive or in the leadership team, to manage a triple P successfully?
One of the things that I think we've done right at the Gautrain is that you don't become CEO without having spent years in the business. You know, you can look at my predecessor. He took the project from concept all the way through into operation. I worked my way up through the technical services unit, chief operating officer. So when I hit CEO position, I knew the business. And as I'm leaving the organization, same with my successor, worked his way up through this. So that understanding the business is a core competency. You know, I think people knew someone coming in maybe would struggle a little bit more. Then other skills, well, you've got to know commercial aspects. It's a contract after all. And you've got to have, I think, good people skills. Most of the job, I always tell everyone, the technical stuff is easy. It's the people that are difficult.
And within that, communication as well and collaboration, because that's my next point. You know, what about clear communication and collaboration between the public and private sector? Because they're two very different sectors.
Exactly. You know, and if you think about this from kind of a contract point of view, it's as long as most marriages are, except you sign it in the beginning and you have no idea where it's going to end up in a changing world. So if you don't look after relationships and have ways of sorting out changes in a changing world, the PPP won't work. But at the same token, it can't just be a free-for-all. So there's got to be some kind of a structure. How do we talk about change? How do we talk about adapting in a very volatile in environment while still sticking to the contract?
Well, I guess you've got to measure it, and you've got to measure it against key performance indicators. So how do you go about measuring the success of a triple P as it relates to KPIs?
Yeah, very good point, Ellen. You've got to have those KPIs, and you've got to measure them all the time. And public and private have got to call each other out when those KPIs aren't being met, and then do a deep dive and say why. You know, what's going wrong. But coming back to the theme of, you know, what it takes to be a CEO, I'd sum it up by saying you've got to be able to think 6 months, 12 months, maybe even 2 years ahead. Because risks, when they come along, you can't manage them when they've happened. You've got to be looking at that horizon and saying, man, what could happen? Often that discipline maybe isn't there, or you just don't know what's going to happen. And then you end up firefighting. And then things can go wrong. So just that forward-looking approach to life helps a lot.
So obviously risk management is a theme or as an aspect key to a successful triple P.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, when people talk about risk, it's often in the context of something that's gone wrong. But a risk is something that could go wrong. So maybe just to talk about this a little bit, and the theory is that you sign a triple P agreement between a public sector party and a private sector party, and you say who's going to be doing what. The second part is who's going to bear which risk. This is a hugely contentious area, you know. So say, for example, you and I were entering into a contract and I said to you, Dylan, I want you to take the risk on how many people listen to the podcast. I will only pay you if 10,000 people listen to the podcast. And you were foolish enough to say, yes, let's do that. You can't manage that risk. You don't know. It's in the future. I can't manage it. I also don't know what's in the future. So then we might go to someone and say, man, you know the industry. Maybe you could insure us, you know, and then you enable these types of contracts. It's all about that uncertainty and who bears the risk of something not happening or potentially happening.
Yeah. What about partners in a triple P working together with local government and other stakeholders to ensure that economic development goals align with the expansion and operation of the train system?
Yeah.
How important is that?
It's very important. And maybe let's take a step back from just talking about relationships with cities and talk about the concept of how we help cities compete with each other. This is a new concept that's come in. It goes something like this. There's a large number of investors around the world. All of them are looking for a place to put their money, start a business. So if you're the mayor of Johannesburg, what do you do that makes your city more competitive than, let's say, Lagos or some other city around the world? Probably top five in considerations is what's your transport system like? You know, so again, think of yourself as an international investor. You come and land at O.R. Tambo, great airport, and you get stuck in traffic on the R21. And you say, I can't do business here. I won't even get to my office if I start.
Meetings on time. Yeah.
Exactly. But compare that to an investor who says, I hop on the train. Fantastic. 15 minutes later, I was in Sandton CBD, and I got back and I caught my flight. I like Joburg. Now, that's this concept of this invisible competition that we never know about. People never say, I didn't invest in your city, but they didn't.
You know, they took their money elsewhere.
They took their money elsewhere. Yeah. We never know about that. So part of our relationship with cities is kind of hidden, but it's helping them become competitive in a very competitive world.
And you would argue that South Africa hasn't been competitive from a transport point of view, making, you know, the country or certain cities attractive from an investment aspect.
That's right. And unfortunately, well, I mean, it's kudos to us, but unfortunately, we're the standout in the transport sector. And it's the lifeblood. It moves people, it moves goods, and it's something that we've got to get right. Now, if you take this back to the PPP concept, I think something that the PRASAs, you know, the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa and the Transnets have got to think about is not trying to run these businesses and operate them themselves. You know, what we've shown with Bombela is that you can have collaborations between public and private, and you can allocate risks that otherwise manifest themselves in kind of what's happening we see on our rail lines as they failing to move goods and people around the country. So I think there's a big discussion that has to happen is how do we stop talking as public and private and start working together?
Well, surely it's playing to the strengths of both sectors, the strengths of the private sector, the strengths of the public sector, and then both can bring something to the party.
Absolutely. And both have to give up stuff, you know.
Make concessions,
you know. And for us, I think from a public sector side, we've always held Bombela to account. This is not just about us giving up something and them taking up and making a profit on it. I take COVID, for example. The ridership on Gautrain dropped 82-83% in that first year of COVID. And we had to share those losses together. So there's pain and there's joy, but both have to be shared.
Yeah, it's a true partnership.
Absolutely.
Welcome back. We are still with William Dax, Chief Executive of the GMA, looking at Triple P success and some of the key elements that go into it. William, how do you ensure that the goals and objectives of the public sector align with those of the private sector? Because obviously that's key to this partnership working.
It is. It is. I mean, if you don't have a common purpose, then it's going to stumble. It's going to be a failure. But having said that, they don't align automatically. I mean, private sector is bottom line driven. If it's not making money, it's in a loss making, it's not going to work. So what we do from a PPP point of view is we say, can we align private sector, your performance, your in terms of running trains and buses, with your financial outcomes? So the incentive to say, my profit depends on me running trains well and keeping them safe and clean and secure, then aligns with our objective in the public sector of saying having an efficient train system, public transport system that moves people. We don't make money out of it, but let's make sure that the private sector's financial interest is linked to our public good interest.
Must be tricky, though. You know, with different goals and objectives, two different, very different sectors. Must be tricky to align those goals.
It is. And let me give you an example of some of the difficulties. So in our PPP agreement, we said to the private sector, you must go and build the Gautrain. Fixed cost, we're not going to put another cent in. But we want an asset that will last 100 years. Now, the private sector comes along and they say, no, that's fantastic. We can do that, but we might be able to value engineer so that we spend a little bit less. But is that value engineering aligned with our 100-year interest in it? And that's where you have to be, or we have to be, a diligent public sector contract manager to say, hang on, guys. No, saving a few hundred thousand rand now by doing something isn't in our interest. Don't do it. And having that discussion, and if it's something that they contracted to do, well, then they'd better do it. If it's something that we forgot, we would say to them, well, please build it in this way, because our long-term interest is that the system works from a 100-year point of view.
I would imagine in that discussion, aspects or skills or elements such as negotiation, consensus building skills, and we're coming back to what we touched on earlier as to what you need as a chief executive involved in a Triple P, those must be key skills in this Triple P partnership.
Yeah. You know, negotiation, I never had any formal training in negotiation. I'm a civil engineer, you know. So what I did was then sit down and just say, hang on, can both of us define what we want out of this and whatever the situation is? What's the challenge that we're facing? The negotiation then is just to say, how do we align? How do we make them a common objective? And then how do we try and align our interests with a bit of give and take? It's a hell of a lot better than going to court, you know, or trying to sort this out with lawyers in the room. So I wouldn't say that negotiation was the be all and end all. It's more about saying, being able to say, I recognize your legitimate objectives and concerns, and this is what I will do, or we will do, from a public sector point of view, in recognition of that. But please, private sector, also recognize that we have legitimate issues and concerns. And that approach, I think, has stood us in good stead over the last 10, 15 years.
You mentioned, heading to the courts or litigation, but how else do you handle disputes or conflicts that might arise in the course of a Triple P? And are there different levels of it?
Indeed, there are. And in our concession agreement, we have a basic escalation process. So step one is to just say, can we sort this out? Can the two CEOs sit down and just say, how do we solve this problem? If that's not possible, then we head off into a more formal dispute resolution process, and you head off to adjudication and then ultimately court. Now, if you think about this from a cost point of view, two people with their team sitting in a room talking is free. I mean, that's the cheapest. Having what you call senior counsel, the most senior lawyers in front of a judge.
Two sets of them.
Yes. And you're not even in the room. and they're charging you a fortune is the worst way to try and resolve a dispute. So that really is the last resort. It's not to say we haven't done it. You know, we've been in front of judges and arbitrators, but I think in each of the cases which we had against each other, we eventually settled and we went back to just talking to each other.
Yeah. And that's, you know, ultimately, I think everyone would agree, the most basic, simple, but perhaps most effective way to two parties getting what they want.
But Dylan, I mean, we obviously have to say, because you can imagine in a South African context, we're all very wary of deals that are struck outside of formal structures. So what we've done on the Gautrain is to say, let's always have that parallel process of being able to talk to each other, but it must have exactly the same kind of probity approach. Define the objectives, write them down, have a formal agreement as to how and when we'll talk to each other. Everything's got to be in writing. No one meets anyone else one-on-one. There's always at least two people in the room. We get auditors in to come in to the extent that there's money involved in this, to audit that money settlement, whatever it is actually appropriate for what is being done. And then we can go to our treasuries and say, we've actually come to a settlement. Here's the probity pack. This is how we did it. And if we had gone the court route, we may have spent, probably would have spent a lot more money, and we could have lost. And on that basis, no one can come along and say, William, you know, that looks a bit suspicious. So keeping in very tight in that sort of ethical, good governance framework that we at the GMA pride ourselves on. That's very important.
Now, you've touched on some of the challenges that come with a Triple P project, but anything else that springs to mind from the challenges you've encountered in this partnership over the years?
Well, I mean, the complexity, you know, and there's a concept of an imperfect contract. And again, come back to that, you know, that's maybe silly analogy of you and me contracting on listeners in the podcast, is just not knowing what's going to happen in the future. You cannot sign a perfect contract. So you have to have in there this change management system. And sometimes that's quite cumbersome. So again, a small example, in another podcast that I've done with you, Dylan, we spoke about a coffee shop. Man, that required a huge variation to the agreement because it deviated from this concept of kind of clean, sterile, non-retail station. So a small example of something that we wanted to do to enhance the system requiring quite a change in terms of the concession agreement itself.
Absolutely. Lastly, any advice you would give to other organizations or leaders embarking on Triple P initiatives, particularly in the transportation sector, obviously your area of expertise?
My advice would be do it. You know, and Dylan, let's take a step back. Wouldn't we be a whole lot happier if other organizations, public sector organizations, had engaged with the private sector? And we had a much more efficient electricity supply system. I'm going to give a shout out to SANRAL. They do great PPPs on their on their highways between cities. But the other ones haven't. And I think that the outcomes that we see in passenger rail,
some missed opportunities.
Some massively missed opportunities. So the advice would be, don't be scared, jump in. They can work. You can make them work. And ultimately, the citizens of South Africa don't care whether it's a PPP or not. No one's ever come to me and said, William, fantastic PPP. They come and they say, William, I like your train service. And that's important. You know, it's about service delivery. It's not about our contracting mechanism. So let's change our view on what outcomes we want rather than who does it.
Because that does seem to be a South African issue or problem, is bringing private and public sectors together. There are clearly opportunities, as you've touched on, but perhaps we're just not maximizing those opportunities as a society or country as a whole.
That's right. And I think it's out of fear of the unknown, because they are complex. They're very difficult to do. They can go wrong. They can be very risky. But that's not a reason not to do them.
The potential reward is big.
Exactly. The potential reward is bigger than the risks they pose.
Right, William, we're going to leave it there. Thank you for your time and your input. We value your insight and learnings as it relates to Triple P success. You've been listening to William Dax, Chief Executive Officer of the Gautrain Management Agency. To listen to this and other interviews about the Gautrain, please tune into our podcasts at Gautrain Talk Station. You can also access further material on our website. That's gautrain.co.za, or follow us on X.